the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast. We all know that the Australian government supports programs that encourage doctors to practice in rural and remote locations, including the Rural Clinical Schools program. What hasn't been clear until now was the strength of the association between those programs and the retention of rural origin and rural trained doctors in country settings.
So many of these people haven't finished their training, and lots of the training can only be done in metro areas. So we very well could see people moving back towards regional and rural areas after they finish their specialty training.
That was Dr. Alexa Seal, a research fellow at the University of Notre Dame Australia's Rural Clinical School at Wagga in New South Wales. She and her colleagues have published research in the MJA this week on the influence of rural clinical school experience and rural origin on decisions about where to practice 5 and 8 years after graduation. Dr. Seal and her co-author, Associate Professor Matthew McGrail from the University of Queensland's Rural Clinical School in Rockhampton, are my special guests today. Was there a specific gap in data that you felt you needed?
So originally, the pilot study started in 2016-17. Over the years, there'd been a growing body of evidence about the effectiveness of rural training. And several of the rural clinical schools have tracked their own graduate outcomes in terms of rural practice and have published this research for their individual university in an effort to provide evidence for the success of the rural clinical schools and the subsequent rural health medical training program. And so we felt it was important to determine the impact of such programs in addressing the maldistribution of medical practitioners between metro and rural, just because of the substantial investment that was made through government incentives. And so several groups had found that participation in rural clinical school placement was associated with an intent to practice in a rural area, although the strength of association was influenced by variables such as rural background. Other research groups determined that the relationship between this rural exposure and taking up a rural career is unclear, and the evidence was inconclusive. So research combining the data from multiple rural clinical schools provided evidence about the effectiveness of the rural clinical school and the subsequent programs was needed. Just recently, with the experience with the COVID-19 pandemic, it's shown that there's been substantial movement from major cities to rural and regional areas. I had a quick peek at the data from the ABS, yeah, and they released in March this year that 71,000 people had moved from regional areas during 2020 to 2021. And so obviously access to a GP and other specialists is already limited in rural and regional areas. So this influx will place increased demand on the existing health workforce, which is already struggling to meet that community demand. There's a 2019 report by Anthony Scott, mm-hmm. Professor Anthony Scott, yep, on the future of medical workforce. And he's commented that the number of junior doctors has almost doubled, but this doesn't mean that the maldistribution of this medical workforce has been addressed. And we're still seeing communities that are struggling to get medical staff they need, especially to run the hospitals.
What does the existing evidence say about what the barriers are for doctors staying or moving into rural practice?
The research that I've done in the past with Associate Professors Catherine Harding and Joe McGurr, we looked at the practice intentions of GP registrars in a regional general practice training program, and it showed that recent GP registrars want to work fewer hours and placed increased importance on work-life balance. And in light of this increased importance of the work-life balance, the perceived long hours or heavy workload associated with a rural GP is a barrier to rural practice. And there appears to be a perception that there's reduced flexibility in working hours in rural practice and less control over work schedule. In the study, there was a strong preference for group practice. None of the Australian medical graduates wanted to take up solo practice. In the study, we also found that the proximity to family and friends was the most important factor influenced the choice of practice location, followed by job opportunities for the spouses and opportunities for the children. So there's a misperception about such opportunities and concerns about career progression in rural areas. There still seems to be a strong bias in medicine to regard specialist city practice as the best and highest goal.
It's not just practicing rurally, it's practicing and residing rurally. And yes, it's not just about the doctor, it's about the doctor's family and whatever their network, whatever they want that to look like. And so it's important that all those aspects can be met, enable the doctor to be happy that all those aspects are met. yeah, things like the Rural Clinical School are really important to get the doctor understanding what it's like to live and work rurally, you know, to be familiar both professionally as well as non-professionally what it's going to be like. It's a package. You know, all those things need to align for it to work for the doctor. And sometimes it works better in their early career. Sometimes it's going to work better in their later career. And hopefully we will see, you know, things like the Rural Clinical School will see the benefits of that in the long, long term. But yeah, we're not quite there yet. We know that, you know, rural origin is important too to assisting the numbers increase, you know, in terms of the rural medical workforce. And that, again, comes back to that familiarity with what it's going to be like, you know, particularly from a non-professional side of things, what life will be like, yes. How they could make that life work, combining professional plus the family network as such. It's complex. You know, we focus a lot on the professional side, but, you know, these other aspects really do matter. Yeah.
Can you describe your methodology for this particular study?
How much time do you have, Kate? I'll try to be brief.
Okay.
Many of the universities, but not all of them, belong to FRAME, which is the Federation of Rural Australian Medical Educators. So in 2016-17, all universities belonging to FRAME were invited to participate in the first collaborative study from multiple rural clinical schools about the influence of the program on the recruitment of medical practitioners in regional rural areas. So researchers from the University of Notre Dame, Australia, collated and analyzed de-identified data that was supplied by participating universities. In an effort to get as much involvement from as many universities as possible, we did only collect a few key variables, such as gender, whether the student had a metro or rural background, whether they had participated in extended rural clinical school placement during their medical school training, and their practice location as listed on the Australian Health Practitioner Register for that 2016-2017 registration period. So for the study, what we did was we looked at domestic students who had graduated from their respective medical schools in 2011. We were looking at practice location categorized by a couple of different models, such as the Australian Standard Geographic Classification and the Modified Monash,
yes,
at 5 years post-graduation. So they all graduated in 2011. We're looking at them in 2016, 2017. So at this point, not all universities had actually started collecting their data, such as metro or rural origin, upon student enrollment. So we had to exclude them from the study. So we ended up with 11 universities participating. They're from, you know, New South Wales, Victoria, obviously Queensland, yeah, Western Australia, Tasmania, and the ACT. That first paper came out in 2019. And since then, our most recent study, the one that's just been published in the MJA, that again looks at this 2011 cohort of graduating students. But in this study, we're looking at the changes in practice location type, i.e. rural, regional, or metro, as defined by the Modified Monash, between postgraduate years 5 and 8. So 8 would be their 2019-2020 registration period.
Two important strengths of the methods as applied here. One is that individual level connection between their 2016 location and 2019 location. So yes, it's retention by the individual itself. So there's no area level measurement. It's individual level. So a strong element. The other one is, as Alexa touched on, was it's not just rural as a singular entity. We broke it down into regional centres and rural locations. So regional centres is defined by the Monash Model Area 2 places, and the rural places are the Monash Model 3 to 7s. And we know that much of the non-general practice training, if it's going to happen outside of metro, it's going to probably be in the MMM2 locations.
Yes.
So it's important to distinguish that rural side of things. It starts to draw out some of that distribution element into the smaller rural locations. And that's particularly important, you know, with growing that general practice workforce and getting them into this, what we call the smaller rural locations, where there really are some quite acute distribution issues happening there.
So what were your big findings?
So overall, we had complete data for 1,321 graduates, and 85% of these doctors were practicing in metro locations 8 years after graduation.
Did that surprise you?
It didn't.
Again, without getting too detailed here. One is that there may be some bias to the participating universities, you know, whether we are getting the mix that matches the whole training workforce. And the other one, to keep in mind is doctors, junior doctors that are in that specialist training, particularly outside of general practice, if they're in that specialist training workforce, then, you know, there's a strong bias to them needing to be in the metro location. So yeah. I guess we're always fighting against that tide. So that's where some of that non-surprise sits.
Yeah. Yeah,
beneath, right. We're always hoping that there's the trend or the tide coming back to rural eventually.
Your comment then, Matthew, about we might not have seen the shift, the tide to rural yet. I fully agree with that, because so many of these people haven't finished their training, and lots of the training can only be done in metro areas. So yeah, we very well could see people moving back towards regional and rural areas after they finish their specialty training.
It suggests, therefore, that you should keep doing this study every 3 years.
Well, just quietly, we are doing the next wave right now.
There's an element of understanding the progression through all those different stages is important. Yeah, you know, it's not just continually cross-sectional type thing and see where we're at. We're trying to get that progress, I guess, of individuals and really understanding that full picture. You know, there aren't many data sets that have really allowed that to be drawn out well in the past.
In our next iteration that we've begun, both Matthew and I realized the importance of collecting data about the specialty training and the fellowships that the graduates have achieved, because that will impact, we assume, where they'll end up.
I'm chatting today with Dr. Alexa Seal from Notre Dame and Associate Professor Matthew McGrail from UQ about retention of doctors after rural clinical school experience. Their co-authored research can be found at mja.com.au, where it is open access. The full web address for the paper can be found in the show notes to this podcast. If you're enjoying this pod, you can catch up with previous episodes at mja.com.au/podcasts, where they are all free to access. And you can subscribe for free at your favourite podcast provider. If you don't have a favourite yet, we heartily recommend Spotify or Apple Music. Back to our chat.
So were there other findings that leapt out at you?
Well, we're really pleased to see that there was no evidence of any urban drift between postgrad years 5 and 8. So almost twice as many graduates moved from metro to rural practice than from rural to metro practice, with an overall increase in rural practice from 7.6 to 9.4%. So this continued movement towards smaller rural and remote areas was encouraging and, you know, supports the premise that some of the graduates may be training in, you know, modified Monash areas 1 to 2, but they're moving to smaller centers upon completion of the training balance that we were talking about before, can't currently be done rurally.
Those who are getting getting the opportunity to do more than 1 year rural training were significantly more likely to be practicing rural than those who did 3 to 12 months rural training, which was our comparison group in that case. And that was using national data that came through the Mabel study. And it collected data not just within the period when the rural clinical schools existed. It captures data that even happened earlier than that program, when there was still some rural training happening, just not in the same formal sense and to the same, extent or size. Yeah.
So does the evidence suggest that we should be mandating more than a year?
Well, anecdotally, at the rural clinical school in Wagga, where I'm based, students who stay more than the 12 months, those who do both third and fourth years of a four-year graduate course, they're more likely to remain rurally for internship and beyond than those students who are here only for one of the two clinical years. To me, meaningful exposure through living and working in rural and remote areas are essential.
All rural clinical schools are looking for opportunities to do that kind of structure, I suppose, that allows more than 1 year. They're limited in terms of the way that the funding is allocated by the Commonwealth under the RHMT program, but where there's opportunities to expand or enable students to do more than 1 year, most universities are trying their best to enable that to happen. My university, University of Queensland, like quite a few others, are looking to build a whole of rural program. So, the whole course can be done regionally and rurally. We all know, the James Cook University model, and that's been successful. And so Of course, there's the Murray-Darling Network. Again, there's that similar structure of enabling long-term, if not the whole course, regionally. And yeah, my university's looking, and being the same sort of structure too. So
yeah.
It's becoming more common, I guess, that approach to, not just a taste, but you really give them the full understanding of what, living and working rurally is like. And also hopefully, establishing those roots, building up partnerships, family perhaps, and also the importance of those social networks too, to really make people feel comfortable and to call it, this is my home.
Are we doing enough to encourage rural origin high school kids towards medicine when they think about university?
There's always room to do more, absolutely. Yeah.
What are we doing at the moment?
Just about all universities are strongly seeking to boost their rural origin intakes. Some of that is driven by targets that are connected to the funding that comes with their RHMT program, but many universities are aiming to go well above those targets where they can. They're always, I won't say limited, but they're always constrained, I suppose, by, that there has to be a quality element to the people that they're bringing in, and that there need to be reassurances that certain targets are met in terms of quality as such. But the limited evidence that's been done about, I won't say lesser quality, but that students are coming from rural origin who may have lower marks doesn't mean they're lower quality. I'll absolutely declare that. But, it's been demonstrated that, they're equally successful at progressing through medicine. They're doing just as well when they're given the opportunity. I absolutely want to say, they are not lower quality. It's often due to, other opportunities that mean that they are achieving less on those intake elements, that they don't have the big support networks that train them up to, for all that entry exams and what have you. So there's often it's just linked to opportunities being less in rural means that they're less inclined to, and they're seeing less peers, you could say, who are going down that pathway. So I think we're slowly building up that network of observing others successfully navigating and being successful at the other end. And so there's definitely a generation now who are coming through seeing, I can do that, I should do that, I'll give it a go.
Many universities now are moving away from selecting applicants based solely on their academic achievement, or Matthew alluded to. There are elements that maybe aren't picked up in an academic score. For example, an applicant's connectedness to rural, or their commitment to community, and the passion, the potential that they have for future rural practice. So I think that's important to capture. And many universities are, including interview component as part of their selection process.
Are there enough rural clinical schools? Do we need more?
It depends what you mean by rural clinical school. I mean, not necessarily yes, but expansion, yes. The breadth of universities that are involved in rural clinical schools is pretty strong already. So in that sense, not needing more. But yes, the opportunities for more students to be involved, the opportunities for those programs to enable longer periods of time in rural, yes, absolutely. And the other one not to forget is more students training, particularly in the smaller rural areas, not just focusing on the big regional centres when we talk about rural training. Mm-hmm. It's the importance of those longitudinal placements in those smaller towns to live and feel and see what it's like in those places. I think that's also really important to get that community side of training, not just the acute emergency type training as such.
Yep. The questions before about rural, should we be getting, more people from rural in to rural clinical schools? Yeah. We haven't really talked yet about our findings about the different graduate groups. We sort of split the graduates by those two key variables that Matthew mentioned before of origin and whether or not they attended a rural clinical school. So we ended up with four groups: those who were of metro origin, who did and did not go to rural clinical schools, and then those of rural origin who did not go to rural clinical schools. 8 years after graduation, those graduates that had the rural background who participated in extended RCS experience were 3.6 times as likely to be practicing in regional areas and 4.8 times as likely to be practicing in rural areas at 8 years than those metro origin graduates who did not attend a rural clinical clinical school. And interestingly, when we looked just at those graduates who had a metro origin, those that attended or participated in extended RCS experience were 2.4 times as likely to be practicing in regional areas and 2.7 in rural. Keeping in mind, these are graduates who are from metro backgrounds. Attending a rural clinical school more than doubled their chances of being in regional or rural practice 8 years post-graduation. I think that's a pretty important finding.
That's a huge finding, yeah.
Yeah, there are metro origins who are open to the idea of working rurally. At the end of the day, they are the majority group. You know, they're going to be at least 70-odd percent of the workforce in the metro origin, just because that's the distribution of Australia's residents. And so they're a powerful, if that's the right word, you know, they're a big group. You can't afford to ignore them because they are the majority. And so the rural clinical school is an ideal opportunity to support them, to enable them to, if they're interested, to experience rural, what it's like both professionally and also as a resident. Yep. And if they like it, yeah, hopefully they'll stay. And our data suggests, when that is the case, yes, they will stay on, or they'll find a way to come back eventually. It's very complex, just the training of a doctor from start to finish has so many layers, so many time components here. Yep. And connection points are where training is happening. Yeah, we've been focusing on the rural clinical school stage of things, but there's that whole period of time that happens after graduation from university, but before they even get into a specialist training pathway, how that group is then supported, at the next stage to find their home, both professionally and residentially. There are less mature programs, the regional training hubs, that are trying to address that gap. There's other even less mature programs like the Rural Junior Doctor Training Innovation Fund, trying to enable junior doctors to experience community practice. So you get them out of the hospital training and find that and experience general practice particularly. And I think that's a super important component, because that's where a lot of the decisions are made or locked in that early stage after finishing university. And so that's a really important stage to not lose them, I guess is the best phrase.
Kate, before when we were talking about, it occurred to me when we were talking about prioritizing rural origin kids, there was actually a separate study with Lucy Walters using frame data from some of the Australian rural clinical schools. And it was found that the students who nominated a rural clinical school as their first preference were significantly more likely to intend to be practicing in non-metro areas than students whose first choice was not an RCS. And keep in mind that in this study, these are all students who had attended a rural clinical school for at least a full academic year. So it might be a matter of prioritizing those students whose first preference is an RCS and providing them with the opportunity to attend a rural clinical school.
Getting more to have that a higher preference is absolutely key of the whole program. And I think all universities are working hard at that to... even though they might be, many of them, locking in their decisions to attend a rural clinical school in the latter stages of their medicine training, in the early stages, they're giving them support to make an educated decision of what their preference is going to be. Sometimes that's driven by where they see themselves working and living. Sometimes that's driven by the education they'll experience, they'll get. Even if it is more so driven by the education, anecdotally, they're more interested and understanding, I guess, of the rural experience. Even if they end up working as a metro doctor, they'll understand rural patients. They'll understand the rural doctors referencing and all that sort of thing. Makes for a much stronger, better workforce.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.